Okay, so if the technology will cooperate, it's a pleasure to be here. And indeed, today my goal is to talk about one particular aspect of networks, a problem that we've been actually very excited lately, is how to control a network. Now, of course, control is a very, very loaded word, and there's a number of questions that we want to actually address. You know, how do you control in general complex networks, and how does the topology or the structure of the network affect our ability to be able to control a particular system? As I said, you know, it's a very tricky issue to talk about control, particularly so in Eastern Europe, where we have some ideas about some aspects of control. So, and not always positive experience with that. So in order to actually do it right, we have to very precisely define what do we mean by control, how, you know, what is really the context here. And to do so, actually, we borrow the term from control theory. There is actually a discipline of engineering quite widely developed and quite mathematical in its basis, which aims to really address how you control, you know, dynamical systems in general. And it has a wide range of applications from electric circuits to flying an airplane and so on. And, you know, when we kind of got involved into this project, we actually had been lucky to have as collaborators Jean-Jacques Slotin, who is one of the world's best-known control theorists and the author of one of the widely used book on nonlinear control. Now, let's go ahead and go back and say, what does control theory tell about the concept of control? By definition, they say that the system is controllable if it can be driven from any initial state to any desired finite state in a finite time. So what do I mean in a mathematical sense is to say that I do have an initial state in the system, and you know the state is somewhere in a very wide dimensional space, which kind of describes fully its current state. And then the question is, can I somehow make the system to go from here to some finite state in a finite time? So can I modify some state variable such that I will force the system to go from here to there. Now, as it poses right or rather abstract, the best way is actually get a very precise example. And a good way to start is to think about a car. Now, a typical car these days has about 5,000 components. Yet, none of us actually tries to control 5,000 components individually. If you think about it, you know, instead what we have a few, three or four knobs that we can modify in a typical car. We have the steering wheel, we have the gas pedal, we have the brake, and we have a clutch. And pretty much we can make the network, the whole car, to go from anywhere to anywhere, wherever a car can typically go, by changing these four variables, which is the state of the steering wheel, the clutch, the brake, and the gas pedal. Down the line, actually, behind the car is a very complicated network, which is, you know, how the different components interact with each other, both mechanically as well as at the electronic control level. Yet, this control can allow us to really move all of these 5,000 components in some kind of coherent way such that we control the full car. So the question is really, if you were to be given a map of the car, that is, you'd be given the wiring diagram of who affects who in the car, could you find these four components? And this is not only specific to the car, but it's specific pretty much to any other complex system. Could we find those nodes in the system whose control we can actually, through whom actually we can control the full system? Now, in order to kind of solve this problem, we have to really be more precise about what we mean here. And any complex system can be, to a certain degree, viewed as being some kind of network where we have a large number of components that interact with each other following some dynamics. And so this is schematically my network that I would like to control. These are the interactions. Some components interact with each other and some do not. And what I'm assuming in this particular case is that I have control over two of the components, the X1 and X2. And the question I would like to ask that if I change the state, that is by inserting a temporal signal onto the component X1 and X2, will I be able to make the rest of the components follow suit and fully control the state through these variables? Now, in order to do so, we have to formalize the problem, and that's what is being done here. So we assume a linear time invariant dynamics. And essentially A is your network, which tells you who is connected to whom. X is the variable defined on each of the node, and you can define it on the link as well, and the vector B tells me which are the nodes that I'm controlling. So the vector B is zero for any component that is not being controlled, and it's a time-dependent function for the components that I'm controlling explicitly. Now, this is a problem that has been explicitly addressed in control theory, and it was actually a control theorist of Hungarian origin, Rudolf Kalman, who came up with what is today called the control criteria or the Kalman criteria, which said that you can actually generate a matrix out of this A and B matrices, and if the rank of this matrix is equal n to the number of components, then the system is controllable. If the rank is smaller than n, then the system is not controllable. So we have a very precise criteria to tell us whether a system is controllable or not if you have the dynamics defined and you know who is connected to whom. Let me give some examples. So this is a system that can be controlled. If you apply to it the Kalman criteria, it turns out that you can indeed control the full system. The idea being that if you control the state of this variable, that affects that, and in turn that affects that, so I have full control over the whole system. Now, where intuition can actually trick us is that if we look at the system based on this description, it looks like that's also fully controllable, but it's not. And the reason why it's not controllable is while I can make them x1 and x2 to go up and down together, I cannot make them to move in a differential fashion. Because, you know, if I increase u1, then I can both increase x2 and x3, but not actually go in a different directions. So in order to control this particular network, what happens in the control criteria sense is that the solution will be stuck in a plane. You cannot move in all three dimensions, so you're really not having full control over the system. In order to control the system, I'll have to put one more variable. That is, I need one more node to be controlled in a particular configuration. So if you look at these three variables, what you find is that the first is controllable, the second one is not, and the third one is. So we have to kind of redefine what we mean by control because it's not always intuitive. So coming back to this problem that we are trying to solve, the question we'd like to ask is that if we're given the network, could we find those nodes whom I need to control such that I have control over the system? Now, it looks like the problem is solved because the Kalman criteria gives us the answer, but it's not. And the reason why it's not solved, there are three reasons actually why we have problems. First of all, in order to apply the Kalman criteria, you need to know the weights of the links. And in most systems, we cannot measure the links. In other systems, the weights themselves along the links are time dependent. You know, if you think about neural systems earlier, you know, the interaction is really time dependent over there. So that's kind of the first problem, is that how we get beyond that. And I will not explain you the technology how we do that, but bottom line, there is a theory which is called structural control theory that states that if we replace these weights with arbitrary values, we can still decide the controllability of the system with some pathological exceptions whose measure mathematically is zero. So the bottom line, what it means is that for the moment, we can ignore the fact that we don't know the weights and we can still decide whether the system is controllable or not. But the real problem with the Kalman criteria is not the weights. The real problem is the fact that the Kalman criteria doesn't tell us who are the control nodes. What it tells us is that if you pick some nodes to be control nodes, do they really satisfy that role? Can you control the network from there or not? So if you really want to find the control nodes, you need to try two to the n combinations. So you say, could I control the system from this node? No. Maybe from there? No. Maybe from there? No. Well, how about this pair? No. And then until you actually find a combination of nodes that can control the system. That really requires to check about 2 to the n guesses. Now, for a large network, this is impossible to do. And the third problem is that, as I said, you know, we have the Kalman's rank condition, but the problem is that if you really want to check that one, the linear algebra packages that are available in the computers are unstable for large networks. So even if you know the Kalman criteria, you can't really run this algorithm because for a network of a million nodes, it's going to fly away for you. So obviously, we have a way to check whether we are right, but we don't have a way to find the nodes that really control the system. So here came actually to us a mapping of this problem to a very different problem that has apparently nothing to do with control, yet it actually solves the problem. And that is, there is a well-known graph theoretical problem which is called matching, and actually there is a huge history in the Hungarian mathematical graph theory community working on the matching problem. And the matching problem is like that. So you have a network, and you want to place red bonds on this network along the existing links, such that none of the red bonds touch each other, which means that they don't end up on the same node. Now, placing a few links like that is easy to do. You know, you always can find a few links where you can do that. What is somewhat harder is to find what we call a maximum matching. This is what is the maximum number of red bonds that can squeeze into the system such that none of them touch each other, none of them end up on the same node. And if you can actually find it for a small network, of course, a few trials and gives you the answer. And the perfect matching, when you have a perfect matching, we call the nodes on which the red bonds end as being matched, and those that don't have a red bond along their way will call unmatched, and that will be important in the next slide. So this is for undirected networks. We can go to directed networks, and there we define the matching as a set of edges without a common heads or tails, and let me show you some examples. So this is a directed network, and here are the maximum matchings for these three directed networks. So on the top, this is the maximum matching. Here, everybody's actually matched. And here, only one node can be matched because, you know, simply you can't place another red link that would start from a different node. Now, why is this interesting for us? Because one can prove exactly that if you try to control any of these networks, those nodes that are not matched, that are white over here, will need to be controlled. That there is an exact mapping of the control theory problem, which is a fundamentally a dynamical problem, into a network problem, which is a graph theory problem, which is the matching problem. So, and this is what is called the minimum input theorem. And essentially, if you find the maximum matching, then you find the nodes who you need to control in order to control the network. Now, let me show you what this means. Well, it means that if you start out from an arbitrary network, it's still a small network that we're looking at, then what you need to do is to find the maximum matching. This is the maximum matching. And then what the minimum matching theory tells you is, the minimum input theory tells you is that everybody who is not matched, that is white, need to be controlled, and then you have a full control over the system. So, and then it turns out that there are four different ways to achieve that, because, you know, you can still obtain with the same number of control nodes, so there are four maximum matching or four control configurations. Each of these configurations will give you full control about this small network. So we took a dynamical problem, and then we mapped it to a topological problem, but the question is, did we resolve anything? Because finding a maximum matching for a large network seems to be just as complicated as finding the control nodes. And indeed, if you do a brute force search, it will require like 10 to the 30 operations to get for a network of 100 nodes the maximum matching. But that's not really the case. Given the fact that so much attention has been paid in the graph theory and the computer science community to the maximum matchings, we have very efficient algorithms, polynomial algorithms, to define the maximum matching. So because we can very fast find the maximum matching, now we have a way of very efficiently finding the control nodes. What does it mean? You give us an indirected network, we can run the algorithm, and we can find the nodes for you that will control the system. So we did that. We took a bunch of real networks out there, and then we started to apply this algorithm. And we asked implicitly, what fraction of the nodes I need to control the network? The idea being that if I need to control only a few nodes, the network is easily controllable. If I need to control all the nodes, you know, of course, then it's hard to control because I need to control everybody. And so we did that for a bunch of networks. So what you see here is each line corresponds to a network, and Andy tells you the fraction of the nodes that need to be controlled in order to control the system. Zero meaning that a very few nodes need to be controlled, and one being that a very, very large number, almost all the nodes need to be controlled. So then there were some surprises coming out from this plot. First of all, there wasn't a clear trend or anything that we could really pick up right away on. The second surprise was that regulatory networks, this is the network of the cell that is really responsible for running its normal functions, that controls the cell. And we thought, hey, this is all about control, therefore, that should be easy to control. You know, that should be the easiest network to control, therefore, a few nodes should be able to control the cell. To the contrary, what we found, that the regulatory network is the one where you need to control the most nodes among all the networks we looked at, about 80% of the nodes. So that was unexpected. Then we said, well, social and organizational networks are really the hardest to control because none of us wants to be controlled. Yet what we find is that the lowest ND was actually in the social and organizational network context. So somehow the way organizational networks are built up is they're ideal for control. A few nodes actually can have a full control over the whole system. So these were somewhat unexpected, so we started to form hypotheses to figure out what really matters. What are the type of nodes that can really control the system? In the last 2 years, both us and both my group and many other groups have shown how important hubs are in the system. So intuitively, it would tell you that if you control the hubs in the network, you can probably control the full system. So we said, let's go ahead and test that. And the way you test it is that you take either a random network or a scale-free network or any of the regular network, and we group the nodes into T groups, like small nodes, middle nodes, and the biggest nodes. And then we said, let's see what fraction of the small nodes versus the high hubs actually we need to control. And to our surprise, it turned out that a very high fraction of the small nodes need to be controlled, let's say in a scale-free network, but a very, very small fraction of the hubs. Overall, both in model networks as well as in the real networks, we find a clear bias such that the control nodes tend to avoid the hubs. They are typically not the hubs. They're one step away from them or further. So that was once again unexpected, not giving us much insight what's going on over there. So we said, let's go ahead and do yet another iteration of the problem and ask ourselves what really determines that who should be controlled. And one way to do that is to do something very drastic. Take a network, whether it would be a neural network or a regulatory network and so on, and then randomize this network, which means that just change the where the links are pointing from the nodes completely randomly, turning the original network into a random network. Now you take this randomized counterpart of the original network and say, let me find out what nodes I need to control over here and how many. And let's see how they compare. If they would be comparable to the original and the final one, then really the network topology doesn't really matter where are the control nodes and how many we need. So this is each point corresponds to a real network, and this is its original fraction of the control nodes, number of control nodes in that system, and this is the randomized one. And the bottom line, you don't see any correlation between them, so which is not unexpected, because by shuffling up the network, we really lost much of the topology that was responsible for the control configuration. So that by no means was unexpected. Great, so that didn't give us much insight. But then we said, let's do a different type of randomization. Let us randomize the network in such a way that each node maintains the number of links it had originally. That if a node had 3 outgoing links, in the randomized configuration will always have 3 outgoing links, but it may point to different nodes, not the one that it was originally connected to. So randomized, but what we call degree-preserving randomization. Each node maintains its identity regarding how many links it has, how important it is in the network. And we did that. There was no difference between the original and the randomized network regarding the number of nodes you need to control. And that was very, very unexpected, because what it really told us is that the number of nodes you need to control is not determined by the particular wiring diagram, but rather by the degree distribution. That is, how many links each node has. And if you got that one right, then you can calculate how many nodes you need to control. The nodes whom you need to control will change in each randomized configuration, but the number of nodes you need to control will actually be invariant. And so now having this observation allowed us to develop a number of analytical tools that take as input the degree distribution of the network that is easy to measure in most networks and give us how many nodes we need to control. Having this analytical tool, this is actually comes from spinglass theory, allows us now to ask specifically questions, what parameters of the network affect controllability? And so the first thing we asked, does it matter how dense the network is, that how many links are per node, or what is the average degree of the network? And we're able to derive both analytically and confirm numerically that the number of driver nodes a network has decreases exponentially with the average degree of the network. What does it mean? It means that if you make the network slightly denser, it will be exponentially easier to control the system. So the denser the network, the easier it is to control. The sparser, the harder it is to control, the more nodes you need to control the system. So that's true both on random networks and scale-free networks. Then the next question we had, okay, so the density of the links does matter. Denser the network, easier to control. How about the heterogeneity? Does it matter that we have hubs or doesn't it matter? So we define the heterogeneity parameter, which is 0 if all nodes have exactly the same degree, like a square lattice. And it's 2 if it's completely heterogeneous. There are huge differences. There are major hubs and many, many small nodes in the system. And as the heterogeneity parameter increases, what we find is that the network gets harder and harder to control. So to summarize our finding, some of the big surprise for us was really that networks that we expected to be easy to control were the hardest to control, the regulatory network. Networks that we thought would be the hardest to control, which is social networks, turn out to be the easiest to control. But under the quantitative sense, we also found that driver nodes tend to avoid the hubs. The more interconnected the network is, the fewer driver nodes we need. Dense networks are easier to control than sparse networks. And the more uniform the network is in the terms of degrees, the fewer driver nodes we need. And the surprising effect from that is that it turns out that sparse and heterogeneous networks are the hardest to control. And the reason why that is surprising is that those are precisely the type of networks we always see in nature, from social networks to technological networks. They're always sparse and they're terribly heterogeneous. There are hubs and many, many small nodes. So in that respect, it provided us a couple of surprises, but most important, it offered actually a mechanism for us to look at any network and find out who are the nodes we need to control the system. And this work's done in collaboration with my postdoc, Yang-Yup Liu, and our collaborator, Jean-Jacques Slotin. Thank you very much for your attention.